And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Here in Washington, the long-awaited return of General Petraeus has finally taken the Hill by storm. Democrats who've been arguing that we need to start withdrawing troops were told, wait till September. Republicans were reaching out, hoping to their messiah would give them all they needed. The streets are full of anti-war protesters and a few pro-war protesters. But really, the protesters aren't the debate. The debate is going on Capitol Hill. And it goes down to the fundamental issue of the Iraq War, which I really think has hit a real turning point right now. There are those that believe, as General Petraeus says, that only a political solution is possible. And the Democrats believe that as well. But what makes that political solution possible? Is it putting more American troops in, or is it starting to withdraw a number of U.S. troops? George Bush spent 6 hours in Anbar province, didn't show up in Baghdad. What is the future of Iraq? To help answer these questions, I've invited Mike Lane. He's a Republican strategist and the president of Intellifin Strategies. He and I have tangled on the war in Iraq countless times over the past 2 years now. And I guess I have to ask you, Mike, are we at a turning point in the war debate?
I don't think so. Going into the Petraeus report, it appeared to me that from a political standpoint, the Democrats had a chance to really force their hand and get their point about redeployment to wherever as the driving piece of the agenda. With a very, very skillful public relations campaign starting about 2 weeks before at the end of August and going through, it seems to me the White House has maintained the momentum. They have maintained control of the football, and it is now playing the game on Bush's terms. The Democrats were unable to turn the whole thing around and take control of the ball.
Well, let's talk about what General Petraeus actually said, all right? He said, this is a very interesting thing. This is an article. Republican Senator John Warner asked General David Petraeus whether the current strategy in Iraq will make America safer. Petraeus replied, I believe this is indeed the best course of action to achieve our objectives in Iraq. Didn't answer the question. So Warner, Republican of Virginia, repeated the same question. Does this make America safer? Direct quote from Petraeus. I don't know, actually. I have not stepped back. I have tried to focus on what I think a commander is supposed to do, which is to achieve his mission. Mm-hmm. The basic question of whether this makes America safer, Petraeus answered honestly. I got no idea. You just gave me a job here. I'm in the middle of a civil war between Al-Qaeda and Iran, between Sunni and Shia. Don't bother me about whether this helps America or not. That's above my pay grade.
Well, in actuality, he didn't mention anything about a civil war. And secondarily, it is above his pay grade. The question is not for a theater commander as to whether or not winning militarily in the theater in which he is commanding makes America safer globally, geopolitically around the world. The question is, am I doing my job in this theater? Because that's what I have a job to do. And he's clearly doing the job, as his testimony and his report pointed out. Democrats did their best to tear it apart. They were unsuccessful. General Petraeus is an outstanding strategist. He's an outstanding military commander. He is getting the job done militarily in Iraq. And if you want to know how this fits into our global geopolitical situation, you're going to have to ask somebody who's in the State Department or somebody who's in White House policy, or even ask a senator what their opinion is. But don't ask the theater commander. His job is to win.
I would ask them that question, Mike, except that they don't know, or at least they're not willing to come on this program or any other program to tell us. General Petraeus, let me suggest to you, is very good at the arcade game of whack-a-mole, okay? A mole pops up in Anbar, and he hits it down. A mole pops up somewhere else, and he hits it down. Again, a Republican, Senator Lugar of Indiana, mm-hmm. no liberal he, but someone who's been in foreign policy, a longtime former chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, said that, I think what we may be doing is planting crops in a flood. Do you agree with General Petraeus when he says, at the end of the day, the only way to achieve progress in Iraq is politically not militarily. And if you do agree with him, then isn't all this military stuff irrelevant?
No. Yes, no, and yes,
okay.
I think. Yes, I agree with him that we need a political solution in Iraq, and that's the single missing piece of the puzzle so far, is the Iraqi government, in whatever form it's ultimately going to take or its currently constituted form, has not stepped up to the plate and done what they need to do. However, what General Petraeus is doing is giving them the time and the security without, you know, necessarily facing the disasters every day that they were facing for the 2 years beforehand, before the surge started, that General Petraeus put together. He's giving them a little bit of breathing room and a little bit of security, more so than they had, so that, you know, they can come together as a government, and if possible, they can do what they want, what they should be doing and what they have to do.
Are they stepping up to the plate? Because even our ambassador says that they're not stepping up to the plate. The GAO says they're not. Only 3 of 18 benchmarks are met. If the Iraqi government is, do you think they're stepping up to the plate with all of this?
Here's what they're doing. Are they meeting the benchmarks as identified by the Congress and the legislation? No, clearly they're not. Here's what's going on, though. Do they have an oil sharing legislation that, oil revenue sharing? No, but off the record, are they sharing the oil among the three groups now? Yes, they're doing that. We have a need, really, for local governments to form. The federal government in Iraq is not doing the job, but are the local provinces and the local town governments stepping up and actually doing the job that they should be doing in a democracy? Yes, they are, and that's a key thing, because they could be an example and a model for what the federal government in Iraq should be doing that hasn't been able to do in the last 3 years.
Mike, when I go to Las Vegas, okay, I place bets on my own blackjack playing, on my own poker playing. I'll tell you what I don't do. I don't place my money on some complete stranger who I don't really trust and how they're spending my money. Let's look at our bet, all right?
Decent bet in the entire casino. You know that.
Yes.
All right.
And let me suggest to you that we are actually making bad bets in a bad casino. We've got 4,000 dead U.S. and coalition forces, mostly United States, 30,000 wounded. We have records show almost up to 1 million Iraqi civilians dead. We don't all agree on that, but everyone agrees on hundreds of thousands. 2 million refugees. In a country of 26 million, 1 out of 13 has left the country. 4 million displaced within Iraq. So a quarter of the Iraqi population is displaced, either within Iraq or outside Iraq. We're spending $2 billion a week, more than $100 billion a year, and all these bets, everything is placed on a government that even George Bush says the Maliki government is not to be trusted. And we hope that they'll do the right thing. Of course, in August, they took a nice little two-month recess. They don't seem to be in any rush about spending American lives and American treasure. Why the heck have we placed all our eggs in this one basket while Osama bin Laden gets happy, Iran gets happy, North Korea, all our enemies are very happy to see us bogged down betting our entire stack of money on the Iraqi government?
Mark, do you want to discuss why we're there in the first place, or do you want to discuss why we're there now?
Because
there are two
different
rings, you know. I mean, if you want to discuss why we're there now, there's a lot to be said for the theory that if you break it, you own it. You bought it, okay?
That was Colin Powell's theory that George Bush didn't listen to.
And we went in, he's listening to it now, because we went in there, and like it or not, we are now responsible for the future of that country. And if we leave, everyone admits that if we leave precipitously, the power vacuum starts to take over. You disintegrate into anarchy, and more than likely the power vacuum is filled by the Iranians, who say, well, we're right next door. We'll just, you know, come on over and we'll take this whole thing over.
Well, I don't know
we
what leave precipitously
not want
means.
Iran
I don't
to
know
do
what,
this.
We don't know what I don't know what leave
Iran
precipitously
needs to be
means.
Kept in its box.
I
we
agree.
Can't let it over
Look,
into Iraq.
Even the Democrats are not saying leave precipitously. Even John Kerry and Barack Obama, they're saying draw it down over a year. No one's arguing that we remove every, well, a few people are, but mm-hmm. most of the Democratic argument is not that we leave precipitously, but that we leave in a responsible way. And their argument is, since we're betting the horse and the farm and American money and American lives and virtually our entire military on the hope that some Iraqi corrupt politician will suddenly listen to us rather than his own constituency, since we're betting our of our honor and prestige on guys that we don't trust, that maybe we can push them to do the right thing, not by saying, yeah, we'll be there no matter what you do. We'll continue to be your servants. I can think of other words.
Well, no, we clearly won't be there forever.
Well, that's what Bush has said.
Well, okay.
That's what Petraeus has said. Maybe we'll have 10 years.
Well, we'll be there in some manner for an extended period of time. I mean, we've been in Korea for 50 years. We've been in Germany for 50 years. There's every reason to believe that we're going to be in the Middle East, probably in Iraq, for an extended period of time in one form or another.
George Bush said we're going to have the same troop strength a year from now.
No, he said we'd be down from 165
back to where we
down
were a year
to 130,
ago.
Right.
Back to where we were a year
right.
ago.
Right, and
when that was working so beautifully.
And if you listen to the Secretary of Defense, he says that if the security situation stays stable on the ground, once we've imposed the stability on the military theater, then we can start drawing them down even further than that. This is all contingent on the stability in the theater on the ground. But if they do, Secretary of Defense has said they'll come home faster than that even.
All we are saying is give war a chance. I know. This is what George
Bush
has
said.
No, we're
saying give safety and security a chance.
No, hold on. In May of 2003, the mission was accomplished, right? And then we had 2 years later.
The mission of deposing Saddam was accomplished. That's what was accomplished.
No, that's not what the sign said. I think it just said mission accomplished.
Right.
I don't remember it saying mission accomplished, asterisk, the mission of deposing Saddam. No. But I'll go back. Maybe that asterisk was really small on that ship banner.
No, there was no asterisk. Perhaps there should have been, because that was clearly what he was saying, was the active war part was over, and now it was securing the peace that we finished phase one, mission accomplished on phase one, done. We are now going to phase two.
Well, that's certainly not what he said on the ship when he talked about combat operations are over.
It was
in Iraq.
It was
significant
obvious.
Combat operations. I think major combat operations are over. I believe
right.
That's the president's exact words.
Exactly.
Well,
and
they're
they were.
Not.
Well, they were.
Well, but they're not
well,
now.
Well, they were. Well, I'm not going to argue that we didn't do a couple of mistakes in securing the peace. Obviously, we did.
See, this is what I like. Republicans are now admitting, 5 years into this war, maybe there were some mistakes made in year one, but we've got it now. What he said in year one was, trust us, they're going to throw flowers at our feet. Cheney said they're in the last throws. Trust us, give us 3 months. Give us 6 months. Give us 3 months. Give us 6 months. Every 3 months. It's give us three more months.
All right,
does that end?
The other thing we don't have from the parliament, the Iraqi parliament, the national government there.
We don't have a lot from the Iraqi parliament.
I'm talking about the other thing that we need is the repeal of the de-Ba'athification, and we need to have the Ba'athists start getting back actively engaged in the government. We don't have the legislation, but you know
and
what?
Why not?
But who knows what the Iraqi parliament's
who
problem
knows?
Is?
Who
but,
knows?
But I do know
we're betting all our troops and money on a who knows?
But the Ba'athists are coming into the government. They're being hired. They're being brought back in even without the legislation. So maybe it's a wink and a nod. But what we're doing is we're starting to achieve that political reconciliation that we need even without the national legislation that makes it happen.
Look, here's what's happening in Iraq.
I said we're starting to. I didn't say we were doing it. I said we're starting to. You know, you bring them in, you know, you bring them in to start with.
All we're saying is give them a chance. Progress is around the corner.
No, we're saying give peace a chance. That's what we're saying, is give peace a chance.
Well, we haven't tried giving peace a chance.
That's exactly what we're doing.
Look, before we were in Iraq, there was no al-Qaeda in Iraq. By the way, Petraeus said that today. Unless you dispute Petraeus, he said...
Well, not today. Not he today. Said it, right.
He said it a few days ago. This week, Petraeus said there was no al-Qaeda in Iraq before we got in there. There was no significant Iran involvement in Iraq before we got there. There was no significant civil war in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
All these things have come as a result of our occupation. And now we're told that the only way to get rid of al-Qaeda, to get rid of Iran, to get rid of civil war is to stay. I say that's counterintuitive.
Well, I don't know how you leave Iraq without the Iraqis being ready to stand up and take control of their own security, which they're not going to do, according to the Jones Report, for at least 18 more months. I don't know how you vacate and don't let al-Qaeda and Iran take over. What else? What other possibilities are there?
Well, I think the Iraqis themselves will fight against them. Let's talk. We're going to have to take a break. Folks, if you want to join in the discussion, this is a live program. It's your chance to be heard. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Come on in. Join the debate. We'd love to have you. You can tell Mike and me we're both wrong if you want. We'll be right back after this.
This is Mommy's bed. Me and Jenny were jumping on it. Mommy's gun fell on the floor. I was a cowboy. Bang, 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 bang. I said, Jenny, wake up, it's just pretend. But she wouldn't wake up.
If you give me
me a fish?
If you give someone a fish,
you feed them for a day.
Teach someone to fish.
You feed them for a lifetime.
Give me a fish, and you'll feed me for a day. Teach me to fish, and you'll feed me for a lifetime.
Through Volunteers of America, you can help change lives in your community.
Oh, hey, mister. Studied algebra in school and got a better job than I could. You take the last cup.
Oh, no, mister. Stuck in an entry-level job because you only learned basic math. I don't have a boss riding my butt like you do, so you take it so you can get back to your desk.
You know, I probably should, but maybe Miss AP Calculus with the $200 haircut in the big office upstairs would like a cup.
Oh, no, mister. What was your name again? Never mind, it doesn't matter. I'm too busy doing important things to care. I just came down for some sweetened stir.
You know, if my limited math abilities weren't keeping me from getting a better job, I'd quit this afternoon.
I don't blame you. But thank goodness you're stuck here because we really need someone to make the coffee.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're discussing the Petraeus Report and the future of the United States occupation of Iraq. My guest is Mike Lane. He's the president of Intellifence Strategies. It's his job to get Republicans elected. I used to work for the Democrats, so you know whose side I'm on. But both of us really just want to do what's right for America. And at this point, the American people, Mike, as you know, the great majority believe it's time for us to start withdrawing from Iraq. Now, Petraeus has said, okay, we can withdraw the surge. But it was very interesting to me that when the surge was proposed, George Bush mostly talked about Baghdad. We got to go, we got to secure the ground in Baghdad, and oh, we're going to send a few thousand troops into Anbar province. All right, Anbar province came, we whacked that mole. But isn't it interesting that George Bush spent 6 hours on the ground in only 6 hours. In Anbar, he didn't feel safe in Baghdad, and he stayed basically on the airbase the whole time.
Well, you know, it's not us that whacked the mole in Anbar. It's actually the Sunnis who whacked the mole in Anbar. They're the ones that got tired of the insurgency and the instability and the insecurity, and they said, you know what, there's got to be a better way. Maybe we should throw in with the Americans and see if they can't deliver what they promise. And the Sunni tribal leaders and the sheikhs and the imams and things like that all threw in with the Americans when the surge started, and guess what? It worked.
You know what? I agree with
Anbar's
you.
Anbar is a good place to be now.
No, I agree with you. But the answer is, the only reason we've succeeded is for political reasons. This is crucial. The reason we succeeded is because the Sunnis don't like to live under Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda wasn't in Iraq before we got there. They don't want to be under Al-Qaeda rule. They want to rule themselves. And let me suggest to you that the Shia, they don't want to be under Iranian rule either. They also want to rule themselves. Now, the problem is the Shia don't want, they want complete control of Iraq. The Sunni don't want to live under the majority of Shia control. I suggested on this show, I think with you 2 years ago, that at the end of the day, I feel like the only possibility for Iraq is partition. We have a Kurdish state up north. They're doing okay. No one thinks the Kurds are not doing good. Frankly, all our allies who might otherwise be killed could find safe haven up there. We have an independent Kurdistan, and the Shia and the Sunni are just going to have to work it out. Maybe it'll be a loose federation. I don't know. I'm not going to make the decision. But let me suggest to you that when we continue to have troops there ad infinitum forever, what it does is it takes away the hard decision the Iraqis have to make. If we got a proxy war going on, and that seems to be what Petraeus says we've got, we got Shia and Sunni in Iraq fighting each other, each supported by Al-Qaeda and Iran. If we've got Al-Qaeda and Iran fighting each other, I say let them kill each other. I'm not sympathetic to either. Why are we standing in the middle of that?
All right, Mark. One of the things we've said we do is allow for self-determination of the Iraqi people and let them do what they want to do. Now, they had these elections that everybody had great hopes for. They were really good. Everybody was walking around with their purple thumbs. You know, it was a great moment for Iraq history because they had their first democratic elections. Now, the government they elected doesn't seem to be up to the task of doing what they need to do. But when you talk about partitioning the country, That would appear to be currently, anyway, against what the Iraqi people want. There's a new poll out today or yesterday that's an ABC-CNN poll. I mean, this is a legitimate, credible one. They surveyed over 2,300 Iraqis or something like that. 62% want a strong central federal government. They don't want partitioning by any means. They certainly don't want a loose confederation or federation. They want a strong central government and keep the thing together. 62% in what is theoretically, a legitimate organization, CNN, ABC, that took the poll.
Let me suggest to
you. Now, how do you get to your partitioning when 62%, in fact, the ones that wanted the partitioning were the Kurds. We know that they're doing it.
Right.
The Kurds were the
38%. They needed the most.
The Kurds were the 38% who wanted the partitioning.
Well, they're not 38% of the country.
But the 62% were the Sunni and the Shia want to come together.
They want to come together, but under their own terms. Let me suggest to you, the Iraqi government actually represents the Iraqi people. The Sunnis say, we've always been in charge of this country. We should continue to be in charge of this country. The Shias say, hey, we're the majority. We should be in charge of this country. They each want to rule each other. They both want to rule over the Kurds. And as you pointed out, the Kurds want to go their own way. Look, I am not saying this is the solution. I agree with you. It's up to the Iraqi people to determine the solution. But whether it is complete partition or a loose confederation, which actually I think may be where it ends up, I think back to Bosnia and the Dayton Accords, and that seems to be how Yugoslavia, where all these people were held together of different ethnicities by a strong totalitarian government. That government went away. They started killing each other. That's how it was resolved under Bill Clinton, under some intense diplomacy in Dayton, Ohio. Or whether it's a strong central government, at the end of the day, I agree with you, it's not our decision. But the Iraqi government is not making hard choices because we are their enablers. We are saying to them, we will give you unlimited men and money forever. Well, you know, billions in walking around money gets lost. Hundreds of thousands of tons of explosives get lost. We're just going to stay there forever. You don't have to make the hard choices.
I don't think we will. In fact, it's always been the administration's policy that when the Iraqis are ready to stand up, we will stand down. Now, it was the Democratic Congress that sent General Jones over there to, you know, and this is the same General Jones that, by the way, that Harry Reid called, you know, the most incompetent general, you know, in American history. But yet Harry Reid trusted him enough to send him over there and say, okay, now that you've retired and we've kicked you under the bus, why don't you go give us a report and do it on our dime so that we can control? Well, whoever was controlling it, General Jones came back. His commission reported that the Iraqis are about 18 months from being able to stand up and do the job. Well, the president has said when the Iraqis stand up and do the job, that's when the Americans will stand down. Let's let the Iraqis continue to train, continue to gain experience, continue to gain confidence, and when they are ready to stand up, I'm sure every American will be ready to stand down.
Let's see, the war's been going on for almost 5 years. Mm-hmm. What happens 18 months from now? Is it 18 months? Let's see.
Mark, it was your Democratic
January
Congress that sent him over there.
Of 2000. Oh, I know what happens. George Bush leaves office. It's a mere coincidence that it happens to be that we're going to stand down as soon as George Bush left office. This was the guy running out the clock.
He was Harry Reid's Nancy Pelosi's messenger boy to go over there and find out what was going on. They're the ones who hired him, not the administration.
It's not about General Jones. It's about the fact that we'll stand up when the Iraqis stand. We'll stand down when the Iraqis stand up. They've never stood up. They're never going to stand up. They have no need to stand up when someone's standing up but before them. If I've got a bunch of bodyguards, why should I risk my life to defend my own country? I got a bunch of mercenaries, and the best part is I don't even have to pay for them. They go, they defend me, they do it for free. They, you know, all those Americans, they die, stupid Americans, and I can sit there and take all their walking around money and take all their oil money. I'm fat and happy if I'm an Iraqi politician. Those Americans are idiots, and I'll tell you who's also very, very happy that we're in Iraq. Two people, Osama bin Laden and the president of Iran, are very, very happy that we're there. It helps their domestic constituencies. It makes them look really good. Everybody's happy except, well, the American people.
Well, if I was the president of Iran, I wouldn't be too happy because it's not very much when we redeploy to redeploy perhaps to Tehran and teach him a lesson or two.
How can we do that if all our troops are in Iraq?
Everyone is.
How are we a threat to Iran if all our troops are in Iraq?
Once the Iraqis stand up and we redeploy right across the border.
Look, once the Iraqis stand up.
We're talking now. The administration.
Do you really think the Iraqis will ever stand up?
The administration is already having internal discussions as to whether we're going to do cross-border raids into Iran and take out their camps over there, whether or
we
not
don't have
that's the
troops.
Right thing. Oh, sure we do. Sure we do.
No, we don't.
Sure.
The reason that they're drawing them down, you know
sure
this
we
as
do.
Well as I do, from 160 to 130, is not because General Petraeus says it's the right thing to do. You know it. Their terms are ending.
Look.
It's illegal to keep them there any longer. We have to bring them back and recirculate them, and now the administration is portraying this as if this is some kind of concession to the Democrats.
Everyone knows Iran is next. It's only a matter of under what circumstances and under what timetable. But if I were the president of Iran, I would not be sitting there puffing my chest out thinking, isn't this great for me? It shores up my constituency.
I think he is.
If I were him, I'd be scared about losing my country the way Saddam Hussein lost his country.
No.
You had yesterday the president of France.
We have no troops available.
Yesterday the president of France said that, you know, Iran is next on the list, that we're going to have to go there eventually. It's only a matter of time.
Guess we'll have to
you've had the prime minister of England, you know, say the same thing. The world knows that Iran has to be dealt with, and it's only a matter of the circumstances and the timing. And if I were Ahmadinejad, I would not be puffing my chest. I would be scared about losing my country if I were him.
Okay, so Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda killed 3,000 Americans.
Osama bin Laden is
he's
just, you know,
fat and happy in Pakistan planning his next attack.
He's wet and cold in a hole. He can't
he's
do anything.
He's not wet and cold,
wet
in, a hole.
Cold in a hole.
He's planning, they're just attacks in Germany that he's planning.
And they broke
he's
them up.
Attacks.
They broke them up.
This time. That's right.
Every time that he's tried to plan everything since the 9/11 attacks,
it's not true.
He's wet and cold in a hole.
It's not
is what
true.
He is.
In Spain, he succeeded in blowing up a lot of things there. Look, he has better
that's
options
true.
In Europe
it
than
was,
he does
it,
in
it,
America.
It, right.
But the point is that he is sitting fat and happy. Ahmadinejad, because what we're doing, we're making bad bets in Vegas. We have bet everything on this hope. This prayer that the Iraqi government is suddenly going to stand up when they've shown absolutely no indication of ever doing it before. And I want to show you something from General Petraeus. This is back September 2004. It's on the computer. All right. This is a Washington Post article, September 2004. It's about a month before the election. Petraeus writes, 18 months after entering Iraq, he sees tangible progress. Iraqi security elements are being rebuilt from the ground up. Iraqi leaders are stepping forward, leading their country and their security forces courageously. September 2004.
Mm-hmm.
That was 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He said they're stepping up. And now we have a GAO report, Government Accounting Office. This is a nonpartisan institution saying, hey, you know, they're not stepping up. 3 years after Petraeus said they're stepping up. Now, I'm not saying Petraeus is intentionally lying to people. I don't think he is. I think he wants to believe in his mission. That's his job. But those of us who are a bit outside the mission, aren't trying to succeed in impossible tasks, realize that when he says they're stepping up in September 04, and 3 years later, there's absolutely no sign of them stepping up, at some point, you have to throw away your losing bets and go consolidate your troops and go out and fight real enemies like Iran and Al-Qaeda.
And Iran's next, without a doubt.
But we can't do that if all of our stuff's in Iraq. That's my point.
Mark, it makes America weaker.
The war in Iraq makes America weaker.
It's a left-hand turn in a blitzkrieg. I mean, you know, right across the border, Tehran's less than a day away.
We don't have the troops.
We got 165,000 over there.
Are they going to leave Iraq? They have to leave Iraq to go to Iran.
When the Iraqis stand up, the Americans will stand down.
When? How about if? And how about if they never do? I mean, we have Petraeus saying 3 years ago, they're starting to stand up.
Right.
And they haven't.
It's been three years since he said that. They've got roughly 48 battalions going now, which is not enough to cover the country.
I think roughly that's what they have. This is an article from September 04. Says there's 164,000 Iraqi police and soldiers. Hold on, I think he mentions the number of battalions too in here somewhere. 40 of the 45 existing battalions are conducting operation. In September of 04, right here, 40 were there. Now we've got 48. That's not stepping up after 3 years. We've got to take a break.
We'll
I will give you a chance
later.
To respond. 888-488-MARK.
Some people in Fairfax County don't know what public access means.
Some think it's just another channel on the dial.
But it's much more than that.
It's the voice of the people.
People like you.
Your neighbors, your friends,
or your family.
People who want to share ideas,
opinions,
cultures, lifestyles,
art,
sports,
music,
events, entertainment,
history,
science,
beliefs.
People who want to learn about television,
producing,
directing,
cameras,
audio,
lighting,
editing, or radio, talk, music.
Whatever you think people should hear.
Public access is the place where everyone has a voice.
And it's the place where that voice gets heard.
A place where you can create your own form of personal expression.
So what do you want to say?
whatever it is,
you can say it here.
Because we're public access.
For the people.
By the people.
It is about balancing our choices between the gray of the concrete jungle and the stunning beauty of the real one. Between a stoic facade of granite and the fury of the canyon. It's why there's EarthShare, the simple way to find balance. EarthShare is the workplace giving program bringing the leading environmental groups under one umbrella. Support EarthShare, support them all. EarthShare, please ask your employer about workplace giving. To learn more, visit our website.
Thousands of kids in this country have everything it takes to go to college. Except the money. The United Negro College Fund. A mind is a terrible thing to waste.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. What's surprising, I think, in the Iraqi debate is how much agreement there is between Democrats and Republicans, between those of us like me who think it's time for us to begin withdrawal, not precipitously, but over, say, the course of a year, and the Republicans who say, stay the course, the Iraqis will eventually stand up, and when they do, whenever that is, we don't know what it is, we can go home. Here's the part that's interesting, the part on which we all agree, the part on which General Petraeus agrees, and I would venture even George Bush would agree, and that is there is no military solution to this conflict. It is all about politics. It is all about hoping and praying and believing that somehow a corrupt Iraqi government will eventually stand up. It is that prayer upon which you base, Mike, and your party, everything. Thousands of U.S., hundreds of thousands of U.S. troops, billions of dollars, all on that hope and prayer.
Mark, the military stick has to be part of it. If you just withdraw the military piece and you expect them to all come together with, number one, without safety, peace, and security, and number two, without the threat of the military there, then they're just going to degenerate into civil war.
How
it's going to be
that?
A bloodbath. Because they've got no incentive to come together. The incentive
what incentive
right
do
now
they have
is that
now?
The incentive is that we are there, you know, giving them the prodding, giving them the diplomacy.
We've been there for 5 years. What's going to change
Rome,
in the next two?
Rome was not built in a day.
What progress is in it? The GAO says 3 benchmarks out of 18.
Okay. First of all, I'm not hanging my hat on 18 months, okay? There may be other people
maybe
who say...
Maybe 5 years.
Oh, we're going to be there for 10 years, okay?
Are we going to be dying at this rate for 10 years?
No. But we'll be there for 10 years. In fact, we'll
How
be there longer than 10
How many billions of dollars
years.
Is
in
this going to cost?
The president said that we will have an enduring relationship with the Iraqi people. That means that, you know, we're looking at something resembling a permanent force that's going to be in that country.
What if the Iraqis never stand up? What if, as we've shown, General Petraeus wrote in September 04, 40 battalions are working. 3 years later, there's 48 battalions. Terrific. At that rate, maybe by 2493, we'll have enough battalions to run the country.
I think Secretary Rumsfeld took his eye off that piece of the puzzle. And when it came to really emphasizing and making the training of the Iraqi forces to the point where they were professional enough, confident enough and organized enough to stand up and do their job, I really think we dropped the ball on that one. And I'm willing
I love
to say,
it. All the Republicans that argued for years, don't fire Rumsfeld, he's doing a heck of a job, don't fire Rumsfeld, now that he's gone, he was terrible, he was awful. You did the same thing with Mike Brown.
First of all, I never...
Throw him under the bus.
I never said that, you know, we should never fire Rumsfeld. I never said, you know, defended him personally. I defended some of his policies. And
I'll have to go back and find some old clips.
And I'm willing now to look at that and say some of the things that I believed back then, I was wrong about.
Okay.
And I've grown, I've learned some things, I've got some new information, and based on that new information, I think we took our eye off the training piece of the puzzle and getting the Iraqis to do it. I think by focusing on doing that part of it now...
But it's not happening, Mike. Well, the political benchmarks aren't happening.
Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid sent General Jim Jones over there to tell them how long it's going to be before the Iraqis can stand up. He was their messenger doing their bidding. He came back and said it's going to be 18 months. Now, if Pelosi and Reid are telling me this, you know, you're not believing it?
No, because Jim Jones is, like all military people, trying to do the president's bidding as best they can.
No.
Those that don't
he doesn't work for the president anymore. He's a retired general. He's no longer...
isn't about Jim Jones. This is about...
It was the president who didn't reappoint him as JCS chairman, okay?
What was it, so Abraham Lincoln?
So he's got no loyalty to the president here. He was on Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi's payroll. Presumably he came back, you know, giving them the report that they were looking for, and he said 18 months.
Tell me who
now,
it was.
Tell me.
I think it may not have been Abe Lincoln, but some famous person said, fool me once, shame on me, fool me twice, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. The Bush administration, from the beginning, has tried to fool the American people. Weapons of mass destruction, okay, no. Al-Qaeda, okay, no. Making Iraq a democracy, okay, no. Now he's saying, as long as there's less violence, it's a success. They keep moving the goalposts. When do we say, you know what? You've had your turn. I don't trust you anymore. You say something, last throws, flowers, they're going to pay for it by itself. I can give you 100 different comments this administration has made that turn out to be 180 degrees wrong. I'll tell you something, and I think you agree with me. November 2008, the American people are going to say, you know what, George Bush, we don't trust you anymore. We don't trust the Republican Party. It's going to be a landslide for the Democrats.
You know what? That is when you get your turn, is in 2008, November. And I'm not willing to give you the landslide yet. I think right now, if the election were held today, things are starting to look a lot more positive for us than they were about 3 months ago.
It's all rhetoric. It's not facts on the ground.
We're not going to win if the election was held today. But next year, you've got a whole new election coming on. You will not have George Bush at the top of the ticket. You will have
all the Republicans are basically supporting him.
You'll have somebody else at the top of the ticket. There will be a whole different situation on the ground.
So then you throw George Bush under the bus, like you did Don Rumsfeld.
There will be a whole different situation in Iraq at that time. Perhaps. We don't know that for a fact, but perhaps. And the third thing is the entire issue matrix will be different. I'm not going to concede the November 2008 election.
I'm not asking you
at this time
to
way
concede
too
the election, but I will suggest to you that George Bush is running out the clock. He's like a guy who's losing a chess game, who starts moving his pieces more slowly and more slowly and more slowly. That way, when the substitute player comes in, he can say, you lost the game. But we're losing the game now, money and troops. Let me go to Ken in San Francisco. Ken, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hey, Mark. Thanks for taking my call. I missed part of your show because I had a bad connection. But I wanted to let you know, I actually, the liberal side generally is the doom and gloom and nothing is going to be good. And I know you've been saying that the Bush administration is moving the goal line, but there's no choice. A lot of the liberals want to leave right now, cut and run, and it's going to make it even worse for the whole world situation. We can't do that. There's no way. It's just going to, you know, bring so many other governments in power over there. It'll be disastrous. We can't just leave. We have to fight and keep on fighting.
How do you know it'll be a disaster, Ken? I mean, look, everyone made these exact same arguments in Vietnam. If we leave Vietnam, it will be a disaster. And we left, and what happened? The communists did take over. It's true. But at the end of the day, Vietnam today in 2007 is a lot better off than it was in the 1960s. How do you know how are we ever going to get, let me just ask Ken, and then I'll give you a chance.
Right.
Ken, how are we ever going to know that the Iraqi government is going to do anything when we do the exact same thing? They don't do anything politically. If we stay there forever, how is it that they're ever going to take the risk themselves to control their own country?
Nobody's going to know for sure what's going to happen. But when you have maniacs like Ahmadinejad over in Iran and a lot of the other neighbors, I can't believe that anybody would think that they wouldn't seize the opportunity and sell as many people as they can, create as much chaos, and then take over the country.
I mean, we could deploy to the border. We can try to block Iranian influence there. But instead of getting involved in a civil war, my argument is America is stronger if all our eggs aren't in the Iraqi basket, but they're available for contests around the world. Go ahead, Mike.
I think Ken is hitting this ball pretty solidly here. He's got some good points. But if you want to go back to the Vietnam analogy, they may be doing some things right now, and we're engaging them, of course, diplomatically, and we're making progress with them. There are still some very severe problems over there. But in the aftermath of our departure, anyone who was a pro-American collaborator or identified as pro-American, they were either slaughtered or put into re-education camps, you know, that took like 5-10 years to get these people re-educated. And they had no choice but to be re-educated or slaughtered. That was their choice.
So, Mike, were we wrong to leave Vietnam? If you had your druthers, would we continue to spend tens of thousands of American lives and hundreds of billions of dollars and be still sitting in rice paddies today on the Mekong Delta? Was it wrong to leave Vietnam?
Under the circumstances, we left in April of 75. Yes, that was the wrong way to get out.
10 more years, 20 more years.
It created severe problems for us. Osama bin Laden has said that one of the reasons he felt emboldened to attack the United States was because he thought that, you know, Vietnam showed that we didn't have what it took to really do it. You know,
what you remind me of?
Jerry Ford made a huge mistake back in 1975, exiting the way he did. It was the wrong.
Should we have ever exited Vietnam?
Circumstances.
We should be there today.
Yes. No. We should. Well, we might.
If they'd ever stepped up,
we might again
Nixon
have an enduring force.
Vietnamization. We will stand. He said the exact same thing. We will train the Vietnamese, and we will stand down when they step up. They never did step up, but we were there. It was America's longest war. 50,000 dead. I don't know how many billions in today's dollars are lost. We achieved nothing except death and destruction for Americans and for Vietnamese. And you're saying we should have been there 10 years more.
No, I'm saying that Jerry Ford got us out the wrong way at the wrong
time. What was the right way at the right time? Was there ever one?
You don't go running with your tail between your legs as your city is falling and leave behind 100,000 people to be slaughtered or put into re-education camps. You stick around, you make a defense, and you find a way to help the people that helped you for the entire time you were there. Whether you did something good or not, and I think we tried to do something good there, but you don't leave those people to be slaughtered.
Well, look,
and
that's what'll happen in Iraq if we do that as well. That's why I, and this is me, I admit, this is my own proposal, that's why I support an independent Kurdistan, because I think the Kurds would take in Iraqis that supported America, and there would be a safe haven for them.
Unlikely. This is all ethnic over there. They're not going to take in the Sunnis and the Shias.
I think the Kurds recognize how much America has helped them, that they would be willing to make a deal with America to in exchange for an independent state or a very strong province. I think they would take in the Americans. Listen, this is at least an option.
I think those people would expect to come to America, not to Kurdistan.
Well, you know, but that's part of the problem.
They would expect to come here.
And would you want them here? Would that be okay with you?
The people who have been collaborating with us, I think we can find a place for them.
Even if it's a million Iraqis? Because most of your party doesn't like immigrants.
If we can't secure our borders and let 12 to 20 million people come over the southern border, you know, over the course of time, I think we can find a place for 100,000 Iraqis helping us and collaborating with us and would be slaughtered if we left them there.
Let me suggest to you that the problem in Vietnam and the problem in Iraq are very similar. It's a problem that the economists call sunk cost. Basically, it reminds me, and what you remind me of is you invest money in this stock. You've heard it's going to be a really, really good stock. You think it's going to go up. You invest at $50 a share, and it goes down to 30. And you're like, I better put more money in so that I can make up for my losses. And then it goes down to 10. And you're like, well, you better put even more money and more treasure in. And then it goes down to 5. And then it goes down to 1. And it gets to the point where you have virtually everything you own in this one stock, because you're sure, you're embarrassed, frankly. You're embarrassed you put the money there in the first place. You know that you put it there under false pretenses. Somebody tricked you into getting it in there. You're embarrassed, so you throw everything. Soon you're selling your house. Gambler's fallacy, everything into this one stock, or everything. You're going to double up your bets, playing blackjack, whatever analogy you want. The point is, the Bush administration does not want to admit that it screwed up royally in Iraq. They do not want to admit that they got America into Iraq under false pretenses.
They've already admitted
no weapons of mass destruction.
The reason he
wants the war
there's
to continue.
There's a whole new team
it's
in there.
It's all about saving face.
They've got a whole new team in there because they've admitted that they made mistakes and that things did not go in the aftermath of major combat operations the
when
way they
George
thought it was
Bush
going to go.
When did George Bush say, I was wrong?
The day
I don't remember George Bush ever saying that. I think Donald Rumsfeld left to be with his family was the official story.
Well, of course that was the official story.
Okay,
when you put a whole new team in, Mark, that's what you're doing, okay? He's got an entirely new team in there. That is prima facie admission in politics, as you know, that, okay, we screwed that part of it up. Now we're going to do it right.
Nah.
You know that.
He can change his team 3 times. The heart of it is George Bush is saying, look, I don't want a Saigon-like episode that happened in April 75 under Gerald Ford. I don't want that happening under my watch. We're going to lose, and we're going to lose with dishonor, but it won't be on my watch. I don't care how many Americans have to die. I don't care how many billions of dollars have to be spent. I don't care how many wounded and wasted and crippled lives have to take place. I'm going to try to say we didn't lose on my watch. That way, when the Democrats take power and we do withdraw, as is inevitable, I can blame it on them. Isn't that what this is all about?
You know what, Mark? Back in 1975, I was sitting in the BOQ lounge at Naval Air Station Chase Field, where I was wearing a Marine Corps uniform. And myself and my fellow Marines and sailors, naval officers that I was stationed with, were sitting there watching this departure, this evacuation, this running away from Vietnam. And every one of us, the people in uniform, wanted to stop it right there, go over there ourselves and do what we could to make it right. The military wanted to go.
And you know what? It wouldn't have changed the thing. It just would have prolonged it by a couple of years.
This
folks,
is
if you want to join in, please do so.
Me and Jenny were jumping on it. Mommy's gun fell on the floor. I was a cowboy. Bang, 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 bang. I said, Jenny, wake up, wake up. It's just pretend. But she wouldn't wake up.
If you give me a fish...
If you give someone a fish...
You feed them for a day.
Teach someone to fish.
You feed them for a lifetime.
Give me a fish, and you'll feed me for a day. Teach me to fish, and you'll feed me for a lifetime.
Through Volunteers of America, you can help change lives in your community.
Oh, hey, mister. Studied algebra in school and got a better job than I could. You take the last cup.
Oh, no, mister. Stuck in an entry-level job because you only learned basic math. I don't have a boss riding my butt like you do, so you take it so you can get back to your desk.
You know, I probably should, but maybe Miss AP Calculus with the $200 haircut in the big office upstairs would like a cup.
Oh, no, mister. What was your name again? Never mind, it doesn't matter. I'm too busy doing important things to care. I just came down for some sweetened stir.
You know, if my limited math abilities weren't keeping me from getting a better job, I'd quit this afternoon.
I don't blame you. But thank goodness you're stuck here because we really need someone to make the coffee.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Is there a way out of Iraq? There are those that argue, as Mike Lane does, that actually we should still be in Vietnam. We shouldn't have even left there. America's longest war would continue even today.
We may have had an enduring relationship with the Vietnamese people had we done it right. We didn't do it right. That's my point.
We did it for, 12 years? I mean, I don't know when you count the beginning of the war. It's kind of hard to in Vietnam. But at the end of the day... Exact analogy? We go on and on and on and on saying, when the Vietnamese people stand up, you know, we'll stand down. They never stood up. And you know why? Because although there were many in South Vietnam who wanted an American-style democracy, and they were there,
right. There
were more who preferred nationalistic Vietnamese, totalitarian, communist though they were, than American democracy. At the end of the day, nationalism beat democracy. And let me suggest to you that most Iraqis want to see us gone. Yeah, the Sunnis want control and the Shias want control, but none of them want us here.
Nixon had the right idea. The Vietnamization, or whatever the hell his word was the right idea. It perhaps didn't work, but they implemented it. We got the vast majority of our troops out. We had some troops left. When the South Vietnamese troops caved in and the North Vietnamese troops came rolling over, my point was we shouldn't have run out with our tail between our legs. We could have sent in a rapid deployment force, and we could have used strategic bombing and stuff like that, naval gunfire, to slow them down while we got our collaborators and our allies out of the country so they wouldn't have stayed there and been slaughtered.
So you're saying we should have withdrawn, we just should have done it in a different
way. Right. I said the exact timing and the methodology was wrong.
So you're saying basically create enough of a military front in order to get the people out,
right.
But you're not arguing that we shouldn't have withdrawn from Vietnam.
No.
Okay.
No,
I'm glad to hear that.
Nixon was the one who withdrew.
I'm glad to hear that because this was a war that had no success. It achieved nothing.
Because we didn't fight to win.
Are we fighting to win in Iraq now?
You could make an argument that we're not.
Really?
You could make an argument that
who
we're not.
Who should we be nuking right now?
I don't think it's going to require nuclear
weapons. That's what they said in Vietnam.
Weapons.
What? We're not fighting to win in Iraq right now? You don't think our... Now I think it's you attacking the troops.
No.
Aren't we trying our best to win this war?
I think the surge is part of the fight to win militarily strategy that looks to be going better.
But we're losing politically. That's my point all along.
But we should have done this surge a long time ago. And again, I was one of those people that thought Rumsfeld had it right at the time. When he said, no, we don't need to put more troops in, he was wrong, I was wrong.
Yeah, Eric Shinseki had it right, but he was sacked because he said we needed hundreds of thousands of troops. But that's all water under the bridge now. The point is that at some point, you don't place money on a losing bet. At some point, you say, to make America stronger, here's an idea. Let's go after Osama bin Laden. Remember him? Remember him? The president said we're going to catch him dead or alive. Why aren't we going in? I'd rather spend 10,000 troops in Pakistan than 160,000 in Iraq.
Mark, this is a better bet than a roulette wheel. Much better bet than a roulette wheel.
It's Russian roulette is what
probably
it is.
A better bet than a blackjack table. You know, the odds...
What makes you think so? Other than you telling me so, and the president telling me, believe.
No.
Petraeus said 3 years ago we're doing fine, and we weren't doing fine then, and we're not doing
now. You write those things based on indicators as to what's going on, and you say, okay, this is my snapshot at the time, and it looked like things were going well. Remember, that. I mean, the vice president has taken back his last
throws,
and he took that back.
Look,
you know.
Let me suggest to you, when you have a boss, and you know what that boss wants to hear, you tailor your reports because nobody likes to give the boss bad news. I mean, that's true whether it's Petraeus or Cheney or anybody else.
This is a guy who's a four-star general. You know, he doesn't need to sugarcoat anything.
Sure he does.
No,
Eric Shinseki didn't sugarcoat, and he was kicked out.
Oh, and he's not doing perfectly fine today? No,
he wanted to be in his job.
He's doing perfectly fine.
Why is Colin Powell out?
He's doing
perfectly
fine.
Because he told the president the truth. That's why.
General Petraeus would like nothing more than to bring the troops home, to be the guy who created the circumstances that allowed the government to come together so that he could bring the troops
of course
home.
He does.
That's what he'd like.
Everybody wants to be
there
forever.
Everyone wants to be a hero.
And listen, I am not saying he has bad motivation. I disagree with the MoveOn.org ad that said, you know, Petraeus or Betrayus. I think when you resort to name calling, you're not making a political argument. Frankly, it reminds me of when Jerry Falwell called Ellen DeGeneres, and it made him seem degenerate. That's not the way to fight Petraeus.
Well,
but what I'm saying is not that he's trying to betray us. I don't think he's a traitor. Dick Cheney and Karl Rove, I might think, are traitors. Not Petraeus, but I do think he's looking with rose-colored glasses. And the clearest way to know that is to look back at his article 3 years ago when he basically had the rose-colored glasses then, and we're in the same, if not worse, shape than we were 3 years ago.
I'm very glad to hear you say that MoveOn.org got it wrong.
They did. They didn't get it wrong. They
got it wrong.
The facts in their ad I have no problem with. I have a problem with the name-calling. I mean, he's not...
Didn't they essentially betray us, U.S.? Didn't they accuse him of treason? I mean, betray us.
That was wrong.
They accused him of treason.
Look, I think they were playing with his name.
And
I think it was wrong, and I agree with you it was wrong. But in the text of the ad, they pointed out how they were playing with statistics. If you shoot someone through the back of the neck, it's considered non-political. In the front of the head, they count half
why
the
is
statistics.
It, why is it that only you and Joe Biden seem to know that MoveOn got this wrong,
every
and the rest of your Democratic field seems to
Hillary Clinton has distanced herself from this. Obama has distanced himself from this.
Elizabeth
Edwards has spoken out against the ad. You're trying to make political hay out of this ad. It isn't about the ad.
Look, the Democratic Party is a wholly owned subsidiary of MoveOn.org.
That's so not true.
MoveOn.org.
If that's true, then Republicans are a wholly owned subsidiary of Pat Robertson. Come on.
MoveOn.org sent me an email saying, congratulations, I'm on their mailing list. They're probably going to take me off now. They sent me one that said, you know what? As a result of this election, we bought it. We paid for it. It's ours. And they were talking about the Democratic Party. We
and
bought it. We paid for it.
It's
never said anything like that. Never said anything like
of
that.
Of course they did. And Christian fundamentalists in your party in 2004 said exactly the same thing. We won this election for the Republicans. We own the party. Move On doesn't own the Democrats any more than the Christian fundamentalists.
Hillary
own the Republicans, but they are a major part of our constituency.
Hillary,
and we respect them. They just went over the line here.
Hillary Clinton endorsed MoveOn.org.
Right.
She endorsed.
Generally, they do good things.
No, no. She endorsed their ad when she said, "General, what you're asking me to do is to suspend any disbelief."
Right. She challenged his statistics.
She called him a liar, was what she did, which is what the
MoveOn.org people did. She challenged his statistics, which is what senators should do. Now, it's okay. It's okay to say, I think you're wrong. It's quite another thing
to say,
Did
Hillary Clinton go to West Point? Does she have any military,
Eric Shinseki went to West Point, and so did Wes Clark, who, by the way, just endorsed Hillary Clinton this week.
And hey, how sad for her.
George, for Fairfax Station, Virginia, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Well, thank you, Mark. I see you're talking about the topic of service and the media coverage and things. And I was thinking back to Bush when it got highlighted early in his campaign that he was absent from the National Guard.
Right.
The media picked up on that, and they said, this document is a fake. This man who's produced this document to show that George Bush was AWOL was a fake. That was not the case.
No, it wasn't the case. It turns out that those particular documents were fake, but the story was true, and
that's
got through the media.
The documents were real.
Not Rather's documents.
The story was fake. The documents were real. That was what the media got out was the fact that they were fake, but that was not true. The story was fake. The documents were real. George Bush was not there for the National Guard.
This is sort of a side issue, George. I've done research on the question. My understanding is he was AWOL. He did disobey a direct order. I did research on that. But that the particular documents Dan Rather relied on were forgeries, even though similar documents like that existed, according to the secretary of the man that got him there. But let's get back to the point here, because that's sort of a side point. How does this relate to the debate over Iraq, in your view?
Well, two things. If we had had two real elections in 2004, and instead of having two coup d'etats, Bush wouldn't be there in office at all.
Well, that's true, but I do want to stay. Look, I agree with you, George, but I do want to stay on tonight's topic, and I want to thank you for calling. We only have a few minutes left, and I do want to quickly change to another topic that happened while I was on vacation. I got to talk about Senator Larry Whitestance Craig of Idaho. The fascinating thing to me in there is here's a man who's arrested for lewd behavior, basically for attempting public sex acts in a restroom. Uh-huh. He pled guilty to it. And what's fascinating to me about it is that instead of saying, you know, I didn't try to do a public lewd sex act, I didn't try to, you know, which is what was against the law, instead he said, I'm not gay, I've never been gay, as if being gay were the crime. And what's fascinating is Republicans who did not call on David, I love prostitutes, and I have long relationships with lots of prostitutes, Vitter, call me a hooker, she calls. They said, don't get rid of David Vitter because the prostitutes were female. Let me suggest to you that if David Vitter were seeing male prostitutes, your party would have kicked him out. I mean, what he did in the restroom was fairly minor. The crime that Larry Craig has committed in your party is not tapping someone's foot in a restroom. It's being gay, and that's what can't be allowed in the Republican Party.
Absolutely wrong. The crime that first of all, I don't believe Larry Craig committed any crime. I think he was foolish to plead guilty to committing any crime. I think it's likely to be overturned when he takes back his guilty plea.
It won't be overturned.
I think it's like, I don't think they have any evidence against him. I don't think he's guilty of a darn thing criminally.
Wide stance.
What he's guilty of.
Do you think he was trying to have sex in that bathroom or not?
I think he probably was, yes.
Okay, all right. I'm glad to hear that you're honest with yourself.
But what Larry Craig is guilty of is a political crime of putting that Senate seat in jeopardy. And David Vitter has not put his Senate seat in jeopardy. Larry Craig has. The Republicans don't want to lose that seat. Larry Craig cannot win it, so he's got to go, and the sooner the better.
We know the difference. Let's tell the truth to the people. Here's the difference between Idaho and Louisiana.
He has put the seat
at
risk.
Here's the truth.
That's the situation.
We're going to give you the inside scoop. The difference between Idaho and Louisiana, Idaho has a Republican governor. Louisiana has a Democratic governor. If Vitter quits,
no.
A Democrat gets in the seat. If Larry Craig quits, it's just another Republican in a very Republican state of Idaho. Your party wanted him to go for two reasons, because he's gay and because it didn't matter, it didn't affect the Senate. You haven't called on Vitter to leave because it would cause a Democrat to be there. And let's face it, your party doesn't mind female prostitutes very much. What it minds is gay people.
I will grant you that if there's a Democratic governor in Louisiana that would appoint a Democratic senator, it's unlikely that we would be willing to vacate that seat before the next election. But again, David Vitter has not put that seat politically at risk. Larry Craig has totally lost that seat. It's time for him to go, and quickly, for the political crime of losing the seat.
And he's lost it because Republicans hate gay people more than they hate Johns who use prostitutes. That's it for the Inside Scoop. Tune in next week for another edition of the Inside Scoop. Thank you, Mike.
That was a good one.